G'day and welcome to the OWN Podcast, a weekly podcast on the mobile industry and mobile tech. We are Outwear Mobile and we're going to make the next hour the best of your life. I'm Ken Humphries, Outwear's iOS team lead, and we've got an amazing lineup of hosts today. Talbo, you've just made it off your deathbed.
Yeah, what? Yep, I did. I came in for you.
Who is this guy?
Ken, I'm pretty sick.
You're a poor sniffling visual design lead today.
I'm sitting here eating many a mandarin.
Many, and vitamin C. You got the vitamin C in you.
We've got a very special guest today at the OWN Podcast, Mr. Michael Kane.
I'm here to talk about agile methodologies because when I'm not making movies, it's one of my specialities. Because if you deliver software constantly and often to clients, it's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
But you're not meant to deliver software.
I'm not bloody
you're
finished.
Only supposed,
I am not
you are
finished.
Only supposed to look, write the bloody stories.
Look, if you've got defects in your code, you cannot possibly submit that to the App Store. Okay.
Thanks for that, Michael Kane. You are, in fact, Pete Collins, back from episode one.
Yes, welcome back from episode one. Back again.
You're a PM. You're Outwear's very first PM.
I am.
It seems fitting that you're here to join us in today's discussion about Agile. And last time you were on, we've just had some impersonations, but last time you were on, Talbo did an amazing impersonation of you.
Debatable.
Have you got something up your sleeves?
I may bring out my impression of Mr. Pete Talbot at a future point in
the
show.
We'll look forward to editing that out of the show
whatever.
Later.
Whatever. Whatever.
And finally, we have Slovenia's own Marko Justinek.
Yep. Hey.
You said you're going to use your real accent.
Real? Oh, yes. Yes, my friends, welcome. Thank you for welcoming
me to
this very, very special podcast you are doing.
I wish I could do that.
Yeah, I'm going to stop right now.
He's allowed to do that because, you know, that's a legit accent. You're one of our brilliant BAs here at Outwear Mobile, so a business analyst. Do you want to tell people what a business analyst does at Outwear Mobile?
Yeah. I talk to clients trying to get their itches scratched. Mm-hmm. And we
find out what it is that they really want to build.
It's pretty actually much, the oldest profession.
Exactly. Yeah. We're getting there. Well, now we have a union at least. Getting the product out in a proper way.
You basically give us devs something to work with.
Pretty much.
You're the bridge between the clients and the developers.
Yeah, that's the old way of thinking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the agile way is a little bit different, but...
Okay, well, let's get to that in a mo.
Exactly.
We do have a really good cross-section of the Outwear team today. We've got designer, dev, BA, PM. So we're going to be delving into basically development process, how we make software here, and, you know, what parts of agile we follow, what works for us, what doesn't work for us. But before we get there... Let's warm up our voices a little. Marko, you told me off air that you did a master's in voice recognition or using voice recognition.
I did.
Do you want to tell us what you did?
I did a mobile app.
I did one of those too.
Yeah, you did?
Yeah.
Good. Getting my uncle's business on track. He's got three little girls. Too busy to remember where he was on business trips.
Yeah.
So we thought about setting up a mobile app that would track his location, a few taps, and a report was set up.
I'm not hearing voice recognition in this.
Input.
Start tracking.
Input. Uh-huh. Input in the app was voice recognition. So while he was driving, he could just talk into the app. What he did, where he was, what happened, and it got translated into text.
So I'm sure you got a very good mark on your master's because I know you're a smart guy.
I got a full.
Did it actually work?
No.
One caveat.
Yeah, exactly. It worked in English. It had like 95-98% success rate. But getting Slovenian or Croatian or whichever language we used, it was ridiculous. is just gibberish.
It's just because the language itself doesn't have as much
Maybe because maybe because it's not supported at all. So it's the algorithms, the backend, the servers, that's quite a big deal. And it wasn't, Slovenia was not supported.
Yeah, okay.
It's, if we would train the app for each and every word, yeah, that might work.
So it's,
but
it's,
the context, it did not.
Voice recognition, much like all of sort of modern technology, is very English language driven. Like it's kind of America and English speaking Europe and English speaking Asia that's pushing out all this technology. So it just has that slant towards English.
Yeah, so I do know Slovenian doctors use voice recognition for their job.
And it just doesn't work, and they're like, yeah, whatever, come back.
It works really good for doctors because it's specialized stuff.
So it's very easy to differentiate.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's whatever they were, the diagnosis, what it was, it's repeating throughout.
And could it be that the words, so in medical terms, it's often like a word that's common across languages, right? Like it's very Latin-based.
Exactly, yeah. So at the time I did...
The podcast has got very niche quickly.
It has. Calling all medical experts working in Slovenia in the mobile industry experimenting with voice recognition software. This is for you.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, at the time that I did my master's, it was about 160,000 words in Slovenian in the system. And the success rate for doctors was really good, but it's just not,
it's consumer. Not feasible for every day. And, so what about, is Siri, or are you use Android? Or
I use iOS.
iOS. So is Siri, does Siri support Slovenian natively?
No.
It just doesn't support it?
No. I have to. Even when I was still in Europe, I was walking down the street in the winter. It was really cold. I had my cold hands in my pockets. I used Siri to switch through albums. I had to use English.
So and what kind of accent did you put on? I can tell you my Siri voice. What's your Siri voice?
It's English, like normal American.
Come on, don't be shy. Let's hear it. Hello, my name is Marco Justinek.
No, it's
Justinek.
Exactly.
Justinek.
Yeah. You don't know me.
Do you just, because like seriously, when I talk to Siri, I either over enunciate. I'm like,
right.
Siri, call my dad.
Yeah, that's nice. That sounds good. You should do that the whole show.
No, I use my American speech background.
I use my generic voiceover. It's like,
okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Please call.
Like,
Kent.
Like Dennis Cometti. That's who you sound like.
Yeah, but he's a special breed.
It's your inspiration. So does anyone here actually use Siri/Google now? Any of that voice recognition?
I use Siri.
It was such a big deal, 2 years ago? It was all new and funky.
Still got a long way to go.
I think, and we touched on this a couple podcasts ago.
Touch.
Siri is definitely coming a long way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's getting smarter at picking up especially the Aussie accent.
I was going to say she, but Siri is genderless because it's a male voice as well. So
it's a droid.
Yeah, it is.
Let's not be gender biased.
Did you know you can do this? And I'm going to do this. I've tried to use my phone on the show many times.
This is going to fail.
We'll see if we can hear it.
Okay,
Siri, learn how to pronounce Kent Humphreys.
Okay, how do you pronounce the name?
Kent.
Okay, thank you. Which pronunciation should I use? Kent. 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 Okay, how do you pronounce the name?
Kent.
Good work.
Wow.
So close.
Yeah. Riveting podcast. Yeah. So yeah, I guess there is very...
But it does work.
So I could, for Marco, I could say I could do like Justinek and teach it that just because it's spelled... Yeah.
And if you're trying to...
I did try to teach my girlfriend's surname. Siri, I couldn't pick up.
Too hard.
Yeah. Oh, it's got these special characters in it. Didn't know what to use.
Collins, you're a droid user.
I am a droid user.
Do you use Google now?
I use the kind of the cards that they surface from Google now. But I don't do a lot of kind of dictation via voice.
Well, it's not going to cut through that. Thick scouse.
I
know. Right there, mate. Google now, just wondering what's going on with your Google Eye.
I'm sorry, I don't understand Yogo Light.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I did find really interesting, and hopefully this is somewhat on topic, is about, I don't know, this is maybe kind of 6 to 12 months ago now, but they made an kind of interesting step with Google, and I'm sure there's some sort of equivalent with Siri, is that you would ask, say, Google a question like, who is the president of America? And it would respond to you as Barack Obama. Uh-huh. But then you could follow on, you could then continue to talk to Google in a kind of contextual way. So your follow-up question could then be, and how tall is he? You didn't need to, it recognized that you're asking a series of questions, which is quite an important step because it allows you to start actually conversing and delve a little deeper.
There are systems out there that can do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's not a new thing anymore. Yeah. It's just, but that was kind of an interesting step, I thought, in actually being able to engage kind of vocally with your device. But I don't use it a lot then, no.
Well, do you think, is it actually a good direction? Like we've all, well, not all of us, some of us have seen the movie Her, where essentially it's this future where basically everyone just goes around and they talk to their computers, and there aren't touch screens. You know, everything is voice commands, and you just having
spoilers, dude.
Not
it's
many.
A companion.
Spoilers.
Yeah, it supplements the touch.
Largely, you're just having a conversation with your computer. Do you think that's actually a realistic
place? Not just a conversation.
That would be spoilers.
Like, I think it's a realistic place, but side question, is it a good place?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's, because you could argue that even now we're becoming more and more distracted from normal social interaction, mm-hmm. I guess, and whether if we start talking to mobile devices and interacting vocally with mobile devices, it's just going to take
further.
This
is a cultural, we just need time to adjust.
I was listening to, I can't remember what the podcast was, but someone was making a parallel to headphones. Like headphones were had that sort of idea a while back. Like people were like, oh, headphones, that's the downfall of society. As soon as people start closing out the world and listening to everything through these headphones, it's just going to be, society's going to crumble.
I think the biggest thing
with
mobile and voice recognition is, no matter who you are, I think you still feel like a dickhead when you use Siri out in public.
Yeah,
that's true.
Like I always kind of like make fun of myself when I do it. Like mm-hmm. I'll be like, okay, Siri, like do this thing that I want. Just joking,
so
but I'm like, actually, it's very useful.
Yeah. As long as you make out like you don't care.
So there's cool. A social stigma still attached to it.
Like, yeah.
I think it's not widely accepted that it's a cool thing to do.
Mm-hmm. But is that just because, look at this person with his fancy phone? Is it just been like, but every phone has it now, I suppose.
Yeah, but.
So is it,
maybe.
Is it daggy? Why is it daggy?
Because you're talking to an inanimate object.
Yeah, it's like you wouldn't talk to your toilet, so why are you talking to your phone?
Well, I was just about to say, though, we did talk about home automation. I don't want my toilet talking to me. I never, ever, ever want that to happen.
I would love that.
Nice bum.
Thank you, Peter. Yeah. I am pleased to accept your waste.
Yeah. Well, moving away from the bathroom, like we talked about home automation. Maybe that's a good fit for voice recognition. So, because when you're at home, typically, and Kinect as well. This is a great example. So the Xbox One, the new Xbox, has all these features where you just like Kinect on, Xbox on,
yeah,
Xbox change channel or whatever, and it already has problems where it picks up someone else in the room saying something, and it's like, okay, I'll turn the TV off. And I don't know how we're gonna. Maybe we need to get AI to the point where it can fully understand what a human actually wants.
I think it's
it's not just a voice recognition problem, but an
there's
AI
a new
problem.
Show out at the moment. It's a HBO show.
HBO.
It's called Silicon Valley,
mm-hmm.
And it was really funny because you should check it out because it's about tech startups and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you'll do that. You'll have to somehow VPN into your HBO account that you have in the United States.
When you're in America, mm-hmm. watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. Just call your friend up and get mm-hmm. them to explain what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But the CEO of this company is using voice recognition stuff. Uh-huh. And he's like saying, play John Lennon. It's like, cannot find John Mellon. Damn it! And he's like the Steve Jobs type character.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Sorry, carry on.
No, I think it's because Google bought Nest as well.
Yes.
3 months ago? 2 months ago? 3 months ago?
Oh, wow.
And they're kind of smart fire detection thingy, smoke alarm, that's what they're called.
Mm-hmm. Fireman.
Yeah, is voice driven and voice activated as well. So you can...
That's also been recalled.
Is it being recalled?
Oops.
Yeah. Yeah. Ah, explain. I wasn't aware of this.
There was a safety issue. What was it?
Because of the fact that you can drive it by voice?
Maybe it was too easy to dismiss or something like that.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it was something like that.
But the interesting thing was, I'm intrigued to understand how they're going to, if you have a Nest and an Xbox One, mm-hmm. and they're both voice driven, like as soon as we get to the point where we have a lot of consumable products that are all voice driven, how they're going to differentiate between commands that are driving.
Well, they're never going to be listening.
I've just seen a video, some dude on the internet put two iPhones or even Google, what do you call it?
Google Now.
Yeah. Google Now and Siri next to each other, and they started talking to each other.
Uh-huh.
It was pretty funny to see.
Was it actual video? Or was it like
yeah, it's actual up? Video. You can look it up.
One thing about the mobile that, so Microsoft's coming out with Cortana, their entry into this, into the human person living inside my phone category. Cortana, it's the Halo, like in Halo,
yeah.
There's like a little hologram lady that helps you out and gives you advice.
That's nice.
They're putting that inside a phone, or they're getting the same voice actress.
That's cool.
We're getting holograms inside your phone. They're getting holograms in Windows 8.1. Look out for it. But what I thought was really interesting about that is that they've made it so you can choose what information she... Look, I'm calling it she. That's already a sign that it's starting to work.
It's a character, right?
Yeah. They've given you access to what she can and can't know. So it is a voice recognition system, but the voice recognition is only good as the intelligence and the thing that it's hooked up to. So they've set it up so if you give her access to your contacts, then she'll be able to understand and communicate with you about your contacts. But if you turn that off, she doesn't know about your contacts. If you give her access to your calendar, she'll be able to talk to you about calendar events. But if you turn that off, she doesn't know. And so the more things you give her access to, the more context she has and the more intelligent she becomes.
But Siri
does
that. And
the more she can help you fight massive intergalactic wars as Master Chief.
Siri does that just sort of not in a clean way though. Like, so if you say, call my mom, it'll say, okay, who's your mom?
Mm-hmm.
But are you saying,
who's your mama?
Who's your mother?
Is your mother fat?
No!
How dare you?
No mum jokes on the podcast.
Speaking of voice recognition, has anyone ever written an essay with software like Dragon? Like
Dragon Dictator or something?
Yeah.
No. I know there's John Siracusa, who's a well-known Mac podcaster. Mm. He gets a lot of RSI, so he actually dictates a lot of his writing. And that works for him. So I think things like Dragon Dictate are different because you have different expectations because you're happy to train it. So you're like, well, this thing's only going to be as good as the effort I put in. So you spend hours training it, but no one is willing to spend hours training Siri or Cortana or Google Now. Like,
I would be.
Maybe they should do that. Maybe they should have like read with Siri every night, and just before you go to bed, you like read a book with Siri, and that helps train her or him to be better.
Would that help with my loneliness also?
It would help, yeah. Double pronged. Are you lonely? Do you need more electronic friends in your life? So, I feel like we're definitely at a point of the technology exists and it's cool, but it isn't seamless yet. So in the way, like, you know, GPS, for example, I feel like GPS is integrated in mobiles. Mm. You just go into any app and it's like, oh, you're here. Here's the stuff near you. But you can't just go into any app and start talking to your phone because it won't be listening. Yeah. You could try.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just
PTV app. Where is my train? Why is my train late?
Yeah, there are just too many kind of nuances and intricacies to the way humans naturally communicate for a machine to. There's so much machine learning required.
I haven't done any research into speech recognition or like
really?
What's going on.
Well prepared.
Okay. I actually have a job here that
last weekend. Yeah. I thought you were.
But like, is the way they're going about it flawed? Like, if the technology as it exists now, are we ever going to get to like Scarlett Johansson?
I think it's just with the sheer amount of data. So right now, everything's going to a server. So like Apple and Google and all these guys are amassing massive amounts of voice data.
Yeah, huge.
Massive amounts. So I think it is something that's learning. Like it is going to get better. And it's just going to be one of those things through sheer data, they can figure it out. So they'll be like, what are the variations of this sound? And they'll have 100 different accents making that sound. So they'll know any of those sounds could be that syllable.
Okay.
And then use some artificial intelligence to pair that with the next syllable. And, oh, it's probably that word. And you've got a really high chance of guessing that it's
so.
It's like predictive typing, right? Like how predictive typing has gone.
If
really
I use
good.
Siri more and more, does it actually get smarter, or is it more of a static?
I don't know.
It does,
but
it does. Yeah. It, but it's just not focusing on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's getting better for everyone.
Like, oh, so not as an individual, but
you help the masses get the better. So product
everyone out. Jump on Siri and just talk to her.
Exactly. Like, or use it more. It's going to get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing with Google. I mean, when you do a traditional search. And you click on, like, through the pages before you click on one of the returned links, mm-hmm. it knows that obviously it hasn't returned the right information for you. And so it learns from that.
Okay.
Or if you click
so
on the second link rather
That's
than the first
what
link,
you're looking for.
Like, it begins to learn that it hasn't returned the right results to you.
Yeah.
It's a similar sort of thing with voice dictation to Google. If you dictate something and it gets it wrong and you start again, mm-hmm. it'll realize that what you said or what it interpreted from you wasn't
what you were looking
and
for.
And so it all contributes to amassing this. You know, huge amount of data about different accents, different types of things that people dictate. The alcohol has arrived.
George, thank you for the cerveza.
That's Coca-Cola.
They do a lot of work in kind of driving, gathering data, similar to how they kind of do that in search as well. So,
has anyone seen the ad for Amazon's Fire TV starring Gary Busey, my favorite
actor? I've just seen the box, and it's, oh, okay, another TV box.
Right. The ad's really
a little black box to go next to my TV.
Yeah. Let's go Gary Busey.
Is he the guy
that I'll have to put in my credit card number?
I'm just really excited about Gary Busey.
Yeah, I see.
But the ad is just like, I like talking to things, and the whole thing is like the Fire TV, you can talk into the remote now.
Yeah.
So it's like, Gary Busey, and then it brings up all the Gary Busey stuff.
Initial reviews I've read about that are that it's not very good.
Well, I think that's based on the voice search. It only accesses like the sort of the root level, like the Amazon stuff. Yep. So you can't be in Spotify and go search, and it searches Spotify, which is kind of pointless.
That is a really hard problem because we've like the internet is all text based, right? Like, if you want to search for some text on the internet, it's really easy. If you want to search for, I want an image that looks, you know, like a green leaf that I just took a photo of. We can do that a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you just say, I want to search for things that sound like this, I feel like the internet, it hasn't got there yet. That's another step that we don't have.
There's
that data.
Too much data to be processed anyway.
But we have text to speech like for years, and you know, the party trick when like 10, 15 years ago when we had a Mac, the party trick was type something in and make the computer say it.
That's fun.
And it was just like people were blown away that you could convert text to speech. So if we can do that, why can't I just do a search by saying, you know, speaking what I'm looking for, and why can't it search every internet site and convert that to speech? Just processing power, I guess.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Quantum computing, where are you? We need you.
Machine learning, whole interesting topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because it really isn't a standalone technology. It's going to be reliant on all these other technologies emerging.
This is how Skynet starts. This is probably another piece of the puzzle. It's all coming together. Drones, voice recognition.
Don't worry about Skynet, mate. It's all right. It's not going to happen.
No. Another thing. I remember reading an article somewhere. It's quite a long time ago now, but Google doesn't allow their employees to use Siri or vice versa.
Because they don't want to teach
because it listens for longer, so they didn't want to steal secrets or something.
Whoa, that's extreme.
So how do you feel about that? You know how like Siri sort of like hangs around for a bit. So you like hold it down. You're like, hey Siri, and then it's like, all right.
It's
what
like
else is going on? It's like,
but it's one of those kind of.
Remember, we should murder that guy.
Yeah, yeah. No, you
like,
go to.
Okay, I got that as
you
well.
You go to a pub and you order a beer, and the person brings you a beer, and then they just like stand next to you for like 30 seconds while you have your first sip. Like,
what else is going on?
What are those inappropriate kind of where people look at you for slightly too long? Yeah. It's like, stop doing that.
That's real nice.
Siri, go away now.
Yeah.
Go away, do something else.
Go learn.
Voice recognition. We'll see where it goes. I think it will subtly work its way in, but it's not the life changing.
Will we ever see a day where it's fine to just talk to your phone outside?
Yes, it's fine to talk on a mobile phone now, right? And that, yeah, that's a weird thought. That
remember back you're when having a disembodied came out, conversation. I was like, oh, look at that guy's got a phone.
Hey, he's talking to someone that's not even there.
So, yeah, I do actually think we'll get there. Are we ready to move on from voice recognition?
Yeah.
I'm just stretching. Sorry. Sorry. That was nothing weird is happening. Stretching only.
Stretching sounds.
Ken, is beer good for colds?
Yes.
Remember that old saying, if you've got a cold, flush it down with all the beer.
Yeah. My mum, whenever I was sick, my mum would be like, oh, you have a day off school, have some beers.
How old were you when your mum?
Well, he was 7 when he got taken away by child services.
Yeah, exactly.
They were good times, happier times.
Hello to Kent's mum out there.
Hi, mum. Let's move on to our main attraction, agile development. When I was at uni, they taught me two things. You can either do waterfall or you can do iterative. These are your choices. So if you're going to develop software, you either do everything in a chunk, you finish it, and then you move on to the next chunk, or you do iterative where you do all the chunks and then you go back and do them again, and then you go back and do them again. Fast forward a bit faster past my uni days, and it's not really how we work anymore. So here at Outwear, we definitely have processes that we're proud of and that we put a lot of thought into, but I wouldn't say that we're agile experts. Like, you know, we're not Scrum certified and we don't go to seminars on agile and discuss the finer points of the philosophy every day. But I think we have developed a development process that works for us. So, Collins, are you in a position to sort of walk us through the high level steps of how we develop software?
I can.
Yes. Being our first and original PM, you probably played a large part in building these processes.
Yeah.
Were you the first?
I was the first.
The first.
Wow. First designer. First. I'm not first anything. Doug was the first developer.
Unfortunate.
You're the first best friend. Potentially.
I'm sorry. Yeah, so a lot of I guess how open we can be to what people might consider kind of agile ways of development. Mm-hmm. It's kind of driven from our perspective most predominantly by the type of contracts that we engage with clients in.
Why? Yeah, we're a service company.
I need you to slow down. You've got to take a step back.
What about if I do
explain yourself
in a Scouse accent?
We deliver agile, right?
It's what? What?
No.
Okay. We're trying to cater to many a listener here. So for everyone out there, and possibly for me,
okay,
what is agile?
So agile, it's a methodology that the kind of umbrella term for a process, a way of delivering software. Software. So there's a number of principles that they kind of define in Agile, which is working software over documentation. So a sign of your progress throughout the project should be that you have continual releases of working software, as opposed to documenting the fact that we're at this stage of the project. You should be very open to change, even if it's at a late stage. You should allow change and almost encourage it, because it allows you to kind of gain a competitive advantage over other software projects. So
I usually get in trouble for that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So it's kind of very much kind of almost, if you come from a much more traditional project management background, from my sense, it kind of very much flies in the face of how you might approach a project of being very structured, very planned. You know exactly what you're going to deliver and exactly when you're going to deliver it. It's kind
you
of
always love those Gantt charts.
We do. We
love
do.
Can't get
enough. So Agile, it allows you to be very, very flexible in what you're delivering and when you're delivering it. Now, one of the things that we struggle with, like I say, is we often work with clients where we're working on a fixed price contract.
Yeah, exactly.
And so there's only a certain amount of time that we can contribute to a project, or that, you know, we're engaged to commit to a project. So one of the things we struggle with is that we can't really be in a position where we can say or kind of work in such a way that changes are encouraged, and we can just easily accept that as part of the project, because it just inevitably leads to scope creep, and then, you know, we lose track of what we're delivering and when we're delivering. So it's kind of hard to marry those set of principles up with delivering a project against a kind of fixed time. So So we sometimes, what we kind of try and encourage is that we work on a time and materials basis. That allows us basically just to allocate a kind of an upper band almost of time that we can work up to. And in that way, we can then just say, you know, we work with product owners on the client side and kind of obviously UX and BAs, and we kind of we can go through a very, very iterative process ongoing throughout the whole project, where we can define almost just kind of an iteration or two iterations mm-hmm. ahead of time as this is what the scope is that we're going to be working on when we get to it.
That to me is a really important factor, that you're not planning like 3 years of work in a 7 day workshop. Like I feel like it's kind of agile is a response to the kind of massive government projects or massive industry projects where they have a massive planning phase, yeah. then they elicit requirements for 6 years. And then when they actually start developing, the technology is redundant
yeah.
and the
yeah.
requirements actually, when they actually put it into practice, they discover that the requirements aren't applicable. And suddenly they've thrown so much money in this thing that they just have to plow on ahead anyway. Mm. And it was a really common thing, I think, in the industry. I'm sure it still is, but that you have these software engineering projects that just go way, way over budget, but they've got no choice but to continue because they don't have a product yet.
Mm.
They need to get to a point where they can actually release something, and they just need to keep throwing money at it until that happens.
Something's out there. Yeah, yeah. And I think one of the big things that we do, and like you said, we kind of take almost the best bits of Agile that work for us and the best bits of Waterfall, and we cherry pick the bits that work for us because it's not necessarily different projects and different clients.
But I mean, we've had like Dave Thomas, who's one of sort of the high up people in the Agile community. We've had a lot of conversations with him, and he's definitely one of the people that says, well, it's Agile is what you need it to be. Like it isn't kind of this the Ten Commandments that were thrown down.
Yeah.
And this, if you do not follow these things, you are failing. Because that it's kind of just going back to the old school thinking, the way of thinking that everything's rigid and fixed. It's just that instead of the set of rules being requirements, develop, test, the set of rules are a different set of rules. It's not meant to be like that.
One of the takeaways I got from when Dave Thomas came in and spoke to us and I found really interesting was when he said, Agile was really, really great in the way that it allowed big companies to actually make stuff.
Ship products.
Yeah, just to sort of...
I said ship.
Yeah, I was just checking. But yeah, it just got them out of a rut where they just were just stagnant. They couldn't produce anything. But yeah, he was very much like, this isn't the answer to all your problems. This is just, we just put this together because...
It's a framework that can
help
you.
It needed to be done. Yeah.
Yeah.
But look, there are some very, very kind of... When you almost... I think Agile as a word just tends to get thrown around quite a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. It's a buzz. It's a buzzword.
It is. Yeah.
You see it a lot on recruiting.
Yeah.
Recruiters use it. You see it a lot on LinkedIn. It's like, I'm a scrum master, Agile.
Yeah.
And then it was always like, I find it funny as a visual designer, say if you're going for a job or you're doing contracting work or something, it's like, oh, can you work in an agile environment? It's like, oh, well, when I can change my mind at the last minute and do whatever I want. Yeah, I can do that. Go to meetings standing up. I'm pretty sure I can handle that. Like, as a designer, I don't think it's as... I mean, you have to, use something like Jira and you have to be aware of the process.
Yeah.
But as a designer, it's more of a luxury than... Mm.
It's more freedom.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's more, I guess, from a... Definitely from a PM point of view, but I think also from a dev point of view is just being really careful about that idea that you can open yourself up to change, because you still need to be very careful about the fact that before, and Kent, you can talk to this more, before you start development, there's a whole set of prerequisites that you do need to have locked down. You can't get away from that. Like, you need to have defined services documentation, a set of defined high res visual designs, UX, the story cards are defined properly, and that's when you start dev. So in order to give yourself time to define all that stuff up front, you can't get in the habit of changing your mind kind of the day before you need to start dev.
Mm-hmm.
You can change, and Agile prescribes that you should be open to change, but you need to still do that in a controlled way.
Well, I think that's something that a lot of startups that fail, they go through that process where they're kind of flopping around like a fish, where they're like, no, we're this, no, we're this, no, 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 let's be this. Mm. And they never actually commit to something. And then it's kind of, Agile has taken them in the other direction.
Mm.
So instead of being so rigid that they don't deliver something, they're so floppy, they're so not rigid that they can't actually commit to something. Mm. It's yeah, two sides of the same coin. So Marco, well, I guess, what is it from Outwear's point of view? What's your contribution as the BA? Are you defining everything, or what part do you play?
We have clients that mostly want to see upfront what they're going to get. Mm-hmm. So we can't really be agile throughout the whole
kinda
project.
It's we'll exactly. make something good. Yeah.
So we do need to go in, talk to the client, what the product is going to be, see what the features are going to be, and then design on those. Mm-hmm. So the wireframes, we are really visual design driven.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have like a 10-page document describing
exactly.
that.
We don't even focus too much on features up front, but mm-hmm. rather how it's going to look and then develop the features on that mm-hmm. and define them.
So for you, what do you need to be able to do your job? Is it's just communicating with the client, or do you get a certain understanding of what it is they're looking for, and then you can go away and sort of flesh it out.
We do need to understand what they're expecting.
Mm-hmm. So did you get a brief? You get a brief from them, is that right? Is that?
Yeah. Okay. We do get a brief. We talk to clients. We have workshops with them as well, seeing what they are expecting to see. Mm-hmm. And it happens a lot, and lately even more than that, they realize that they don't need two-thirds of the product they're looking for. And that's even good
it's
for
kind
us.
Of boiling down the product to what it is that it really should be.
What is going to be that benefit of the product? Mm-hmm. What is going to be the good
that's
thing?
It's so essential with mobile. You know, it has to be that. What is the core functionality?
Yeah, because apps are small. They have to be small. If it's big, it's going to fail because nobody's going to use it. Mm. And it's going so super fast. We don't have 2 years to develop something.
Yeah, to toy around.
2 months, maybe. Not even that.
Yeah.
And everybody's even pushing us to be super Harry Potter style wizards. Oh, yeah, you can do everything. It's like, here's your magic wand, done.
I'd like a time and materials contract with the Harry Potter option.
Yeah. Thanks. You're a wizard, deliver. Peter.
Deliver. Abracadabra, deliver.
Yes, so, yeah, we do talk to clients. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that's part of the...
Right, that's enough wizard jokes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, good one.
When you talk about putting on a resume that a designer is someone who can work in an agile environment, I do think it's something that we perhaps take for granted, that there is a certain connotation that you're willing to work in a fast-paced, shifting, like if you were working in a very staid kind of corner of this industry, you would be doing the exact same thing for like 4 years. It'd be like, your job is to take these kind of requirements and convert them to these kind of requirements. And I want you to do that now for the next 4 years. And that's, I think we take it for granted. Like we just kind of, it's just like, well, of course we don't work.
Well,
like
being a service provider, it's sort of, comes with the territory a little bit, I suppose.
That variety. Yeah, but you could still work with the client and just fall into that, get a long project basically and just kind of settle in and hunker down and go to sleep. Do you know what I mean? As a professional. But I feel like in this environment, A, mobile, B, very agile, there's always something new to consider. Like you're constantly being challenged. You don't just get comfortable and nestle in. You're constantly questioning what you're doing and saying, well, is this the best way to do it? Should we alter it in this way?
Yeah, like I think that's a good point, that we just don't have the luxury of, not necessarily that it would be a luxury, but say for example, if you wanted to work in a waterfall method where you define absolutely everything up front, and there's a, you have this gate that you pass through and you say, right, all of our requirements are done, defined, we signed off, and we're not starting any dev until all of that's done. We just don't have the luxury of having these long periods of time to do that because, iOS, like the latest version of iOS comes out in, when, September, and then you get a beta version by June the next year. So you've got, like, before this huge change is going to happen, that's going to have massive implications on the requirements and what your app's going to look like and how it's going to behave and what it does. Mobile projects are inherently very, very quick, or they need to be very, very quick to avoid those kind of things. And the only way you can really get around that is by beginning to prescribe to some of these things a little bit like agile, where you do open yourself up to a little bit to change as long as it's in a controlled way.
It's a mental preparedness.
Yeah, that's the culture of the company that is willing to take on all of the, those mm-hmm. changes and not yep. be, oh, everything's changing. We said something before, like 2 days ago, we set it up. Now yeah. you want to change again. It's not going to happen. It has to happen, in, mm-hmm. especially in mobile.
Yeah. I think we see a lot, you know, because a lot of the companies that will come to a service provider like us will have quite a deep hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff always has to be signed off
yeah.
from the guy up at the top, you yep. know? So Agile doesn't really work in that way. So a lot of the stuff that we do has to, because it's like, I need this to be rubber stamped by like these seven yeah. departments yeah. and the CEO.
Yeah,
so I you think, can't I just think, be like, oh, by the way, we just decided to put
we just changed it.
Yeah, I think it's better for the user. The difference in if you were like a single product company, you would just say, this guy, he's the owner of that yeah. feature set or that area of the app, and he makes the decisions and he's close to the ground. So you don't have to go, you know, to the C-level suite of the company in order to get approval. This guy, we've given him responsibility, and that means you can iterate faster yeah. and you can yeah.
like a product faster. Owner is I think is becoming an increasingly valuable role to have on
absolutely,
a client
yeah. yeah. And yeah. we're finding it more and more, like yeah. so many of our clients will have a product owner, and it'll, you know, what they say goes. You know,
to me, it's a great choice because they're focused on that
yeah.
on that one product, and they're able to just concentrate on that and make sure that one product comes out as great as it can be.
Yeah, they have to have a good roadmap strategy set up, and there can only be one, pretty much.
There can only be one.
And
loving the Highlander references in this podcast.
Every episode.
I think that's like the seventh.
Seven for seven. So one of the elements that we kind of touched on but we didn't delve into, I think, is the constant feedback. So within the development phase, we always break up the work into iterations so that we can have it's pretty much standard 2 weeks what we go by. So at the end of 2 weeks, we're actually releasing something. We're making a product that we can give to the client and they can actually test. And it's funny how obvious that seems to me now, that, well, of course you want them to see it like every 2 weeks. What are you, crazy? But honestly, that's not how software projects used to yeah. run. Mm. Like, you would spend a year working on it and then you would show it to the guy at the top and he'd be like, oh, I don't like this, this and this. Redo it. Mm. Thanks, Steve. Steve Jobs obviously would have said things like that.
Yeah.
I just had to bring him in somehow.
back in my web design days, it was always like the big launch, like, you know, and
mm-hmm. yeah.
and you would have sign off from, you know, like static visuals, and that sort of worked okay for web design. Doesn't really work that great for mobile
because they're so interactive.
Yeah, but so you would have these visuals signed off, and by the time it got into development, there were just so many things that change, and then yeah, you're just like, let's do all the work at once kind of thing, and then all of a sudden there's this big push and the website comes out and mm-hmm. really at the end no one was happy. It was like, oh well, this is yeah. this isn't really what we all signed up on, and uh-huh. we all sort of
yeah.
But
thanks for the hard
at the
work,
end of the day, it was like the agency got paid yeah. and was like, okay, let's move on.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we work in
just to be clear, that I wasn't talking about Outware. We don't yeah. work
previous
like that.
Life, yeah.
yeah, that was another
we
industry.
Do websites here.
Yeah. yeah. We don't do websites.
Yeah, that's it.
Outware.com.au, we do websites.
We did that one website once. And that's our own website.
Outware.com.au, yeah. 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 I was going to talk about, I think there's sort of a positive tension that we have here between you know, clients that haven't worked in mobile or this kind of industry, where we're trying to, you know, explain the value of getting a product out there. So yeah. that's something that you guys, the PMs, have to deal with a lot, is that tension where the client obviously wants to wait until a thing is polished 100%. It is, you know, immaculate, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you need to have that tension where there's someone pushing to get it out the door as mm. well. Because that's the ultimate test, you know. When you get it in the market, that's when you see what direction you need to go in.
Where you need to shift.
You might work for years on this amazing feature, and if users don't use it,
yeah, you get your most valuable feedback yeah. when it's in the store, definitely.
Yeah,
but this the whole concept of what we would call MVP or a minimum viable product. It's a really mm-hmm. important kind of idea to get across the client team across early.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, we don't need to develop every single feature in our first release. Let's get a basic product at the door, and then we can have subsequent releases or follow-up releases where we add features. That's how a user, an end user, would expect an app to work in the store. They get updates to their apps.
And I think that's, for mobile, that's even more acute, because we've just been trained that way, that you get an app and it won't necessarily have every feature you want, but it will come. Like even, you know, the games and things like that, you get a certain set of levels, and then you know that within 6 months they'll add a few more level packs. So it's just kind of the expectation people have got around mobile.
I think
mobile.
It's a different way of working, and we're seeing it more and more in advertising, and like, you know, how brands have to be more reactive and they have to be sort of engaged in more of a conversation rather than just coming out there and just saying like, we're amazing at this thing. We'd like, we're so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a shift, because like in the past it was like, here is our product, and it's kind of like we spoke on about with Luce.
Yeah, exactly. We're
here is our product. It's perfect. Mm. We're experts at everything. We're going to give it to you, and this is like the shiny bit of whatever,
mm-hmm.
like the shiny golden mystical thing. Whereas software, the way it works is like, you know, we don't have all the answers. We don't know what all our users are going to, how they're going to use mm-hmm. this. It's so mm-hmm. complex. It's so...
Yeah. There's so many variables. Like,
yeah,
software is variables. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. It's a collection of variables that we've aligned in a good way.
Yeah. So, yeah, really, it needs to go out there and, you know, be...
And that is
and teased out. And
have the test.
Yeah. That is frightening. So it is.
Yeah, and that's
you do need to have courage to push a product out that is a minimal viable product and accept that customers will understand that's what it is. But you know, that's why in Agile you keep iterating and you keep working and within a month you have the next update, and within 3 months you have the next update, and it's not this thing where every 2 years you drop a massive
new version app. Of everything.
Do you think it's? You're truly able to work in an agile way in a service type.
Well, that's what I say.
Without being embedded in another company.
It is a tension. To me, it's a positive tension. So, you know, in your working career, you come across times when you're like, oh, I just wish this would be easier. But it's actually better for both parties that you have that little bit of tension, and you're pulling one way and they're pulling the other way. And the end result is better for both of you. So I think it's a necessary state. It's my take.
Indeed. Concur. I concur.
We were talking about, like, you know, leaving this product until X point and then dropping this thing. But Marco, we do user testing as well.
Part. Yep.
So do you want to talk about what how that plays into things? That feedback?
Well, clients do push some features in that we don't really like and we know they won't work well. So we have to... Hey, George. George's here too.
We got a podcaster here without beer, George. Are you doing your job or what?
Yeah.
Please, sir. Can I have some more?
So we have to test the features. If anything is pushed in too much, we have to see if it will work.
Mm-hmm.
So we do go and test the users, the existing users, seeing how they react to changes, to new features, and we do see that we have to push back more on certain things.
Well, I mean, you like, so we make a lot of apps, so, you know, that's our expertise, but you can't know.
Exactly.
Because you get too close to an idea or a project or a feature, and you just kind of get fixated on it, but you need to actually put it in front of someone and see what an actual end user who doesn't know the product.
There's heaps of great ideas, new ideas, super... different way of working, different ways of interacting, but you don't know how it's going to work if you don't try it out.
So how often typically do you find you do user testing? I mean, every iteration obviously is kind of a bit over the top because it doesn't give you a chance to kind of actively, get the feedback that you've gathered and include that.
It's a focus on like areas where there's uncertainty. Yes. So we had a great example with AFL when we were working on it for this release. We had some proposed changes to the match center and we weren't sure which way they turn out. So we needed to put it in front of some people that didn't have all the background story, who were just, you know, a typical user who's going to rock up and try the app and see how they interact. And I mean, that was very telling, right?
Yeah, it was surprising how different reactions were to that new feature put in, because they were expecting something completely different.
Yeah.
Tapping on a button or whatever it was, we saw it's just not going to work. So we were able to come back and say, hey guys, look, it's okay. We can get this working, but it's certainly not going to be good for the user.
And imagine if you'd left that until the product was live in the store. It's a little bit too late then. So it's, you know, it's a really great example of why you need that feedback early. Yep. Feedback early and feedback often. I think that's a really, really helpful part of it.
I think there's another part of this whole kind of MVP idea as well that is kind of interesting that you don't...
Peter, stop talking about me.
MVP.
Most valuable podcaster.
Most valuable Pete. That would be me. Thanks, Talbot. You know, it's okay to ship software. I'm not suggesting Outware make substandard software, but it's just a widely accepted fact in the software industry that it's okay, or it happens that you ship software with bugs.
All software has bugs. Plenty of times where Safari just like crashes.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I just go, I'll just restart it.
Yeah. So you cannot, you could spend all of your time trying to get to a point where your build or your software is defect free, and it's just not going
to
happen.
We're not talking about critical bugs.
No, exactly. Obviously. So the other idea that you kind of need to work with alongside this idea of user testing and finding your most kind of minimum viable product and what features you are and aren't going to include is the fact that you're going to find defects along the way as well. And you need, again, this is why the product owner is an important role, for them to decide what are the bugs that are acceptable to go live with and what are the bugs that aren't. And you need to factor that into kind of the end product that you're going to deliver as well, that it might ship with bugs. And again, it's okay to think, well, we can rectify that in a future release. We know it's there, it exists. It's not a major impact on any sort of functionality.
It's again that tension of weighing up the pros and the cons. What's the pro of releasing this app? You know, how many people are going to start using your app and you're going to start getting to share content with, versus what percentage are going to maybe encounter this minor bug.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, is that trade-off worth it?
It's better to get something out there.
I still feel like every time, you know, I'm trying to get sign-off on something, it's almost like it's going to print. Like, that philosophy.
That you can't change it. Like,
we've got to check for typos and check all the bleed and registration. It's all got to be... Because like this print run's going to cost us a fortune, and that's it.
Once we've made the TV ad, we can't change it halfway through the run.
It's still good if you think like that.
Well, yeah, obviously it helps with design, but there are certain things where you need to be like, well, you know, we don't have all the answers. Your users are the ones that we need to worry about. So why don't we get something out there? Yeah. Might be like, let's not worry about the shade of green. Let's get in front of them and see if anybody, you know, and we can change it at a later stage.
I think that will be, from the industry point of view, that will take decades shift. Like, yeah, and I don't think it's not a problem of any certain person or certain company or certain style or certain whatever. It's just that has been the norm for decades. And, you know, it's going to take decades.
But put yourself in a marketing manager's shoes, right? That's terrifying to just be...
I can't afford shoes like that.
Snake skin.
To just go like, we'll just, you know, we'll fix it later. Like, that would be terrifying. You'd be like, no, I don't think so, Kent. Yeah.
Well, again, I keep coming back to it. That's that tension, right? So you've got to have all these parties that are passionate about kind of one area, one thing. And you've got to find the best middle ground between all these guys and try and, if you actually get a product out there, then it's a win.
Yeah. Now you're on the right tram.
Say what?
I'm trying it. That's my catchphrase.
Yeah. Okay. Now you're on the right tram.
Now you're on the right tram.
Now you're on the right tram. Yeah.
It wasn't. Calm yourself.
That was just generic Australian. Not specifically Peter Talbot.
But it's interesting. I'm working on an app at the moment that we are actually just about to launch, which is exciting.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of going through
still
this
working
big,
on that.
Thank you. We're going through this kind of big phase at the moment. We're planning out what are these next releases that we're going to do? How are we going to improve the product? What are we going to fix? What are we going to change?
Yep.
And it's great that they've set aside this big, you know, we've had to make a lot of assumptions about kind of the amount of time we need, but we've set aside this bucket of time to address customer feedback. We're going to spend a lot of time once this is launched to assess you know, what's happening when it's actually out on the store. What are users saying about the product? What are they saying is missing? What's not working? Or this behavior doesn't make sense? And we're giving ourselves a lot of time to address that, which is really exciting. Like, it's a good way to think about
it. Well, it's an acknowledgement that the product is for users. Like, the product is not being built so that, you know, the marketing manager feels good about himself and sleeps well at night. The product is being built so that users have the best experience they can.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's what we're all here for. Like, that's why we're making this podcast, right?
Exactly.
I just got a really strange image in my head. It was like the whole organization of a huge industrial corporation just
in their
like
underpants,
standing behind a phone, just looking at the user, just like wanting him to press the right button. Just like,
push the button.
I hope he's using it okay. Yeah. Press back, press
swipe
back.
That.
Because that's what it is. It's like hundreds of people making something that's going to communicate with one person.
Mm. Yeah. It's really personal, isn't it?
You know, it's like this mountain of people and just like one guy with it holding in his hands. And it's just difficult to
but it's,
get in the shoes of that guy.
Yeah, because it's funny though that, I mean...
His shoes I can afford, by the way.
We've done a lot of user testing on the apps that I'm working on at the moment. And when you're that close to an app or you're that actively involved in it, you just kind of think, oh, this makes perfect sense how we've designed it's working, how we developed it. Right. And then somebody will come in and they'll just... They, for some reason, I don't know whether they're just thinking differently, and you're kind of sat there watching this person trying to use your app, and you're like, just press back. Like, it's obvious, just press back. And they're like, no, this doesn't work. This isn't how I expect to behave. And it's just, like, it's, in one sense, it's really frustrating, but obviously incredibly valuable to, you know, you think, oh, this app's perfect. I've spent ages working on it. It's just, well, it's perfectly brilliant.
That fits in with that what we were saying before about that mindset that you need to have to work in this kind of work. Agile environment, you have to accept change.
Absolutely.
You have to accept that something's wrong and you need to alter and change course. So, Pete, before you made a gag about doing your meetings standing up, and I think...
Hilarious.
my previous work experience was working in a large multinational
McDonald's?
Engineering firm known as the Golden Archers. I had a real job. And sorry, anyone who works.
Hey, come on! Whoa! That's a bit harsh.
Implying that I
McNuggets. Some of my servants
McNuggets.
Working in the software industry, as in a large firm, and I really got to see firsthand the disconnect between the different teams. So, not only was you know the requirements team on an actual physically different floor, but there was just no interaction. Like the document. Was the way that you interacted with the requirements manager. And if you interpret it, you would just kind of sit there and go, what did they mean by that comma? Are they saying like and or? I guess they're saying or. I'll just implement that and the testers will catch it. So I think, you know, you're making a gag about the stand-ups that is very cool and very common in Agile. But I think that is a huge part of making a project happen. Yeah, we were talking about product focus and minimal viable product and everything, but there's still a bunch of people that have got to make this thing come to life.
That's right.
So, like, Pete, as a designer, what's your experience with that kind of direct communication?
Well, I mean, standards are obviously really important. My previous job was a similar sort of thing, like huge organization. Development team was on the same floor, but like way on the other side.
Yep.
And... I think I just like lost a lot of weight just walking back and forth across this huge building all the time. But attending their stand-ups and stuff was really helpful. But I think that's why the Agile manifesto, you know, was written, is to stop that sort of like the document is the Bible. It's like it's boiling it more down to, hey, at the end of the day, we're just people. Just talk to the guy and just let's make stuff.
Well, I think
let's not write about it.
A little bit of that is I really hate stereotypes about developers because, you know, obviously all my friends here and many of my friends outside of work are developers. And I think there are...
Excuse me, George is just face palming. I think I'd just like to retract what I just said.
Okay. No, he's just Googling. There are developers who it's not their natural tendency to have that kind of communication. So I think it's really helpful. I mean, I would, if you contrast 1,000 developers and 1,000 designers, probably a larger percentage of the designers are going to be extroverts that want to talk and, you know, talk it out and all these kind of things. So I think for developers in particular, you need that little shove to try and get them to actually open up and talk to the rest of the team and make sure they're communicating clearly. You know, PMs are naturally very good at it. BAs are naturally very good at it. Designers are naturally excellent at it.
Pleasant company.
Pleasant, you did. Nice one. Good communicator. Pleasant community. Present company included is what you're about to say. Pleasant. Yes. I'm just going to keep talking so you can't even talk. There are two agile.
For the rest of the
pleasant company all around. So there let's are two, have a drink.
There are two
another
principles.
Old saying, shut up, Peters. Shut up.
I'm not Peter. I am Michael Caine.
You're not going to do the Michael Caine anymore.
Look, because you can't bloody do it. Look, let's not talk about this stuff anymore. Okay.
Okay, anyone who's not named Peter, what's your opinion on that communication? So, you know, developers in my old company, if you were working as a BA, you never saw a developer.
No,
here, you've got a lot of interaction. Well, how does that work for you?
Well, it depends on the BA. The good BAs go talk to developers. Mm-hmm. They go talk to business, see what can be done, what cannot be done.
Yeah.
But it's so much more obvious and expected in Agile that there's less documentation, more talking, more communication, seeing, talking more to developers. So you get the point to developers so they understand the background for that feature. In Waterfall, when we used to work, it was whatever was written down in the document, that was it. Build it, interpret it however you want it. Just let me see something built. And that didn't work out really well most of the time. So what we do here is pretty good. We still do focus on a big chunk of the product up front. But going into development, we do talk amongst each other, talk to developers, telling them what we meant, what client needs, and it gets developed the way we want it to.
Currently, we work in Agile in sort of a way that sort of works for us. Like, it's modified for someone who is working as a service provider. So as what I was saying before, you can't, dealing with, you know, that many stakeholders, you can't just, like, we couldn't just go, oh, this is kind of what we're thinking for design. Let's just go ahead. The user is going to need something sort of similar to this. Let's just make something.
Yeah.
And you can't really
I would argue that could be as effective, but it's harder to sign off. Like, it's harder to sign off a big check and go, yeah, just go nuts.
If you're like,
because it could fail.
A Google or like a huge tech company who could be like, I want you guys to be my incubator for the next like 12 months. Well, then you can do that. But in
how many clients
do
you have like that?
Sorry.
How many clients?
Yeah, it's zero.
Last year I saw one of the iOS engineers at Spotify. He gave a talk.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because, you know, they are a product company. Their product is Spotify.
Yeah.
And he was able to describe their processes where it's essentially every 3 weeks they drop a release. And everyone is just continually working on a new feature. And if your new feature hits one of the 3 week release cycles, it's in Spotify and everyone gets it.
Yeah.
And if you miss it, you go into the next release cycle. And to me, that kind of typifies the difference. You know, we're not going to say to a client, we missed the start of the AFL season. We'll catch it next year.
It's all good. It's all good. It's all right if we come back in round three, right?
No biggie, right? Yeah. I agree what you said, Pete. We use Agile that works within a service industry. Mm. And that, I think the final thing I want to talk about just to round this out is the fact that our processes do change. So it's not a fixed, solid thing. As we need to adapt, we adapt.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's one of the interesting things I was going to say is that we've talked a lot about how we are open to change or how we can change the actual product, but one of the
not
very
even
important
the product,
things as well is
we even change our processes
exactly,
quite a lot.
Yeah, so
everybody's on board on changing. Yeah. Let's get something better out.
Sometimes Pete has a beard. Sometimes he just has stubble. Like, it just changes. Yeah.
I'm gonna come back with a mustache.
Yeah, a mustache after Easter. And we just adapt. We just roll with it.
I mean, I'll look different. People will get used to it. But the important thing is we do we run regular kind of retros and that kind of stuff to understand how we can actually just deliver the product better, how we can run the processes better and make
get something out to market quicker, or, you know, if things aren't working between different teams. That's an important part as well. It's not just about how you can be open to change from the product's point of view, but also working processes, team communication, that kind of stuff. So,
and I mean, Pete and I, like, you know, I started 3 years ago. Pete, Colin, Talbot, same for you. Like, you know, I've seen massive changes in the way we work, and I'm really proud of that, because to me, we don't. Talbot just like clicked his shoulder in a very unhuman way. Yeah, I've seen massive
human.
I am human being. yeah, I've seen massive changes in the way that we work, and we're always in the same way that when you're making a product, you know, adhering to Agile, you iterate on the product and you're constantly getting feedback and you're constantly changing and updating. We treat the processes the same way. We're constantly feeding back on what does work for our team, what doesn't work for our team, where we need to improve. And to me, that's, you know, that's being Agile, right? We're moving on our feet.
I don't know. I think Agile's kind of a joke.
Interesting. This is taking on like almost like hundreds of thousands of software developers right here. Go for it. Peter Talbot, I'd like to.
I love it. I love that it exists. I love that it's
Talbot's final words.
And I'm so glad those guys wrote that document 10 years ago.
It's good that they've wrote it. I think it's a major shift in the industry. We're getting a different way of working. We get a lot of new products out. But like, what I think you're worried about is it's getting abused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right? Like agile.
Yeah, it's,
It take what works for you.
It's just a better way of thinking.
I think so. I think, well, it's shifted the industry, at least from my point of view, and the industry is better off for it. And products are better off for it, and users of software are better off for it.
But to me, it just seemed like the buzzword of...
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, I think this discussion has been a great dissection of, you know, what we mean by Agile and what works for us and what are the important elements. And I don't think, you know, if we go back to before that Agile manifesto was a thing, we wouldn't have had the same conversation.
Yeah.
So to me, there's a lot of benefit that's come out of that. Collins is just stepping out for a little moment. He's got to take a call, I guess. I hope.
I just don't want the agile way of thinking to become this new doctrine. Like, I don't think that's what
it's
about.
Like it was in a waterfall.
It's like, oh, don't move too far away from this like methodology.
Because documentation. Like, no, we don't need no documentation.
Yeah.
Has to be. We still need documentation. We still need to transfer that idea, that feature that's in our head to somebody else's head. And if it uses any artifact that helps from waterfall, then great.
Yeah.
Right? All the use case diagrams, UML artifacts, everything from waterfall, it's still useful, but it has to be put in the right order, in the right place.
Yeah. So it's like it's a reshuffling, it's a tweaking, it's a modifying, it's moving in the right direction.
There are features that can be defined with just one sentence, but there's some things that you have to draw because you cannot explain it with words.
Yeah.
And diagrams are fine with it.
Sometimes you have to explain a feature with interpretive dance, for example.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And,
because and we have
the
that
printed
section.
Page will just not.
And for those people that are very unfortunate that they're listening and won't see this,
and
Pete Talbot is about to give us
night.
An impression.
Pete, keep your shirt on. Keep your shirt on.
Wait, hang on. Just one more arabesque.
I think.
Kent, what is a scrum?
If you play rugby, it's where the two sides will.
To me, like I don't prescribe to the. I'm not interested. I think our conversation here has been the perfect conversation about Agile. It hasn't been about let's define all these keywords.
Kent, what is a sprint?
Pete, it's the same as an iteration.
I'm trying to get some answers because I want to know why all these terms, these agile terms, hands in quotation marks, why they're all so athletic when developers traditionally aren't very athletic people. Well, I think, is it because they like didn't have that earlier on in their life? So it's like,
I'll never be in a scrum.
Yeah.
But now I have scrums every day.
Yeah. They should be called.
I've never been able to sprint. Yeah. But now I'm in
now
a
I sprint.
Sprint
every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I think you've cut to the core of Agile, and it's about non-athletic people feeling athletic. It's nothing to do with products, all this minds. MVP stuff, all this
MVP tension. As well. Yeah. I lost that.
They've got us nice. Covered on every quarter. Thanks, guys. That was an excellent conversation.
Can I apologize for leaving?
You can. I assume realized it was a very important phone call.
My cactus hadn't been watered for 5.5 months, and I had. I suddenly realized I had to do it.
It wouldn't survive.
I thought
conditions.
That was an adequate conversation we all had. I give it a C minus. So
C
that's the highest grade you ever gave.
Yeah.
Why is C minus?
I just want to point out you always give a harsh rating of the podcast.
You do.
And you've barely listened to said podcast.
Hey, I've listened.
What episode are you up to now? 3.
This is 7.
Episode 3 is definitely our biggest seller. Episode 3, just everyone went nuts for it. We're going to get Lucene time back.
I'm going to eventually listen to number 7. So can I just send a message to myself? Okay.
To future self.
Don't ever wear that t-shirt again, Peter. Sideways stripes don't help the way you look. Is that what you're about to say?
Vertical.
Hey Pete, I know Peter Collins always tries to bring you down, but just remember that you're doing great and stay the course.
And remember to pick up stamps on dry cleaning.
On that note, Peter Talbot, I'm doing air quotes. Mm. Peter Talbot, could you take us out and tell us how people can follow us on Twitter? Peter Talbot.
Yeah. Just go to at Outwear, Twitter.
Say something creative.
Photo pixels. Photo pixels. And I love Comic Sans. Comic Sans. Greatest. Greatest. Whatever it's called. Yep. Great. Right. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Yep. Yeah. Twitter's great. Love it. Yep.
Thanks, Peter Talbot. That is the OWN podcast for another week.
Thank you. This is the Queen saying goodbye.
That's him as well.
Wow. We'll catch you next week.